We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Welcome to the Cash Considerations Podcast, a Chicago Bulls podcast where we always have a road dog mentality. I'm Ricky O'Donnell. Jason Pat's with me. Jason, what's going on?
Not much. Road dog. Also, I believe we are starting to form a Chicago Bulls wolf pack. The Bulls are like a pack of wolves, according to Jim Boylan. I guess he really just loves dog references when talking about his new team here. I don't know.
No, he loves 90s wrestling. Road dog Jesse James from D-Generation X. Now we got an NWO shout out with the wolf pack. I mean, what else are we missing here? I feel like there's at least a few more wrestling stables in the back of my head somewhere that I can't think of.
I was never a big wrestling guy, so I got to tap out.
Shameful. No wonder this podcast hasn't made us any money yet. Anyways, this is the Cash Considerations Podcast. The Bulls, they're still bad. Believe it or not, yeah. The Bulls remain a complete joke of a franchise, of an organization, and of a team. The Bulls are now 2-4 under Jim Boylan.
2-5, I believe, actually.
2-5. All right, 2-5. Since our last podcast, they've had 3 games. They lost to the Magic in a tight game that went down to the wire. That was in Mexico City. Bulls lose 97-91 in that one. You know, when we talk about the Bulls having this international fan base, how the Bulls could be, you know, a team like the Lakers, beloved around the world, running themselves like, you know, a power player throughout the NBA landscape. I feel like that Mexico City game was one of the games we talk about for that. Because that entire stadium was Bulls.
This is going nuts for like a game that was terrible. Like I kind of like half watched it the other day, not live. I was just kind of working head on the background. But the fans were going nuts for every Bulls basket, despite the, like I said, the game was absolutely awful, slow pace, bad offense, just a bunch of crap. But fans were going nuts, and it was for the Bulls mostly because like probably not the Magic aren't really a worldwide draw, but the Bulls, like you met, like we've mentioned. Worldwide brand, huge deal all over the world. I know I had somebody tell me the other day, just like when they go abroad, they like when they see like NBA jerseys, Bulls are like a huge popular one there. So like you said, like they fans were going nuts for the Bulls there, and of course they delivered a nice loss to a very mediocre Magic team.
Two remarkable things happened from this Bulls game. For one, Zach LaVine got hurt. He had like a foot injury, an ankle injury. He's got an MRI. He hasn't played since. He's going to be out, you know, at least through part of this week, I think. And in case
it seems like it's going to be all week, because when it first happened, he was like, "Oh, I'm going to be fine." Which, all right, doctor, like probably not. Because then he also admitted that like he felt a pop. Whenever you feel a pop, you claim like I felt a pop, but it might have just been some fluid. Whenever you feel a pop, I feel like that's not a good thing. And then it came out that I believe it was officially diagnosed as like a sprained deltoid ligament in his ankle. He was in a walking boot. I feel like that's something that's like a multiple week injury, I'm sure. And like, and especially in a season like this, there's no reason to bring him back like super quickly. So like, I feel like he'll probably be out this week, maybe even next week as well. Like, obviously he'll be wanting to get back on the court, and the Bulls want to see him back on the court to play with, get the young core together because they've barely played together. But it was a completely stupid injury as well, because it seemed like it happened on the last play of the game when Bulls were down 6 and LaVine, for some reason, tried to drive and, like, dunk with a basket that wouldn't have mattered, and they came up hobbling. I know Casey Johnson reported that there was some belief that it might have happened earlier, but it sure seemed like it happened on that last play. It could have been completely avoided, and, of course, it just figures that on the last play of that stupid game that they lose against a bad Magic team or average Magic team that Hurts himself and is going to miss probably a couple weeks.
The other notable thing from that game, 13 people involved within the organization got a stomach virus from players, executives, coaches. Jabari Parker's one of them. He didn't play in the last game and lost to Oklahoma City. And that was because of the illness, not because he's completely out of the rotation, which he is. We can talk about
that. We'll talk about that later.
Yeah, Bulls go to Mexico City. Their best player gets hurt, and the whole team gets sick. Great trip.
Did you see the video of their team bus pulling into the hotel? I feel like that was
even better. The bus bottomed out.
Yeah, the bus bottoms out, and like the NBA Twitter account, like for some reason showed that. Like I don't know if they were like trolling the Bulls, but like there was absolutely no reason to show the bus bottoming out as it pulled up on the curb at their team hotel. But it was just like a perfect. Basically, like, statement of where the Bulls are at and just, like, basically an ominous sign for that trip. And it obviously turned out very poorly.
Yeah, so that couldn't have gone any worse for the Bulls. They did follow it up 2 days later in San Antonio. This was the best Bulls game of the season, right? A 98-93 win over the Spurs.
I'll say second. I'll butt in there. I feel like beating the Thunder a couple weeks ago at home, Lowry had a huge game, that game winner over Paul George. I'm going to put that as the best Bulls game of the year. This Spurs game, we could probably go second.
All right, so in this game, Bulls are down 21 at one point in the second half. They go on a huge run in the third quarter, led by Chris Dunn. Dunn finishes the game with 24 points. He ices it down the stretch, as we saw him do multiple times last season. This was only Dunn's fourth game back, dropping 24 points. That's the second most of his career. Bulls went on an 18-4 run. Over six minute span late in the second half. Spurs shot one of 10 over that time. Really good to see Chris Dunn back at the controls. It was a lot of mid-range jumpers. Still Chris Dunn, not getting to the foul line, not shooting threes. But as we saw last year, Dunn's bread and butter is kind of coming off that screen and roll, taking the mid-range jump shot. The defenses in today's NBA are like built to concede. He does hit that shot at a pretty decent clip, though. And we saw on Saturday, it was enough for the Bulls to steal a win.
Yeah, and obviously, it feels like the Spurs just kind of took the foot off the gas, and the Bulls just kept fighting hard. They kept the defense up, and the Spurs also a team that kind of the Bulls can kind of match up with, even though they were down big. Like a team that the Bulls can come back on because the Spurs take a bunch of mid-range jumpers as well. They don't shoot that many threes, and they just kind of stopped falling. DeMar DeRozan had a really brutal game, 21 points on 8 of 23 shooting. He was a minus 17. The Bulls actually forced some turnovers. The Spurs just got really sloppy, kind of just, I guess, they've been playing really well, too, but they just seemed like they just kind of took the Bulls lightly in that second half, took the foot off the gas, and the Bulls just kind of kept coming. So credit to them for pulling out that type of game. The Bulls didn't, like, they didn't really play well at all. They only shot 43%. They were 6 of 29 from 3. They were really hot. Justin Holiday was 1 of 12. The road Holiday woes continued, 1 of 12 overall. But like you mentioned, Dunn was really great. Hit some of those big clutch shots on the stretch, some really tough mid-range jumpers and floaters, which he has done. Lowry had one of his best games of the season, 23 points, 9 of 18 shooting, hit 3 three-pointers. And one huge thing, huge aspect of this comeback, I feel like, or just the game in general, was the Bulls only turned it over like 7 or 8 times. We've seen, and we'll talk about this in a bit, talking about the Thunder game, the Bulls have a huge issue with turnovers. I believe even with Hoiberg and now under Boylan, I believe there's something. They might be the worst team in the league in terms of turnover percentage. In the Spurs game, they only had, like I said, 7 or 8 turnovers. They kept took care of the ball. So despite the fact that they didn't shoot very well, the fact that they didn't turn the ball over was great. They set up the defense. The Spurs missed some shots, and they just kind of rode that momentum with Chris Dunn pulling it out for them. So I guess it was a nice win for them. Like part of me, I even just tweeted this, like, part of me wishes the Bulls would just lose all these games under Boylan and just make them look a complete disaster. But, like, it is nice for them sometimes, especially when you see a young guy like Chris Dunn hit big shots like that. It is good for them to win some of these games and not just completely go into a completely loser mentality. One interesting thing I feel like about this, Dunn having this big game, is the fact that Zach LaVine, as you mentioned, he had the injury, did not play again.
Right.
And I feel like that we have seen in going back to last year that Dunn and LaVine have not been able to mesh very well, and that Dunn, it feels like both guys have played their best without the other on the court. And I feel like that's going to be something we're really going to have to watch once LaVine gets healthy, whenever he comes back on the court. they need to, these guys are going to have to find some type of chemistry together, because so far they have not done it. The sample size is very small. But last year, him, Dunn, Lowry, and LaVine played something like 255 minutes together. Their net rating was like minus 21. This year, they've only played, I think, something like 11 minutes together. They're like minus 6 in those minutes. It just has not worked out for them on the court, because I feel like with Dunn, he clearly is better when he's dominating the ball, when he's going downhill, doing that pick and roll. But then with LaVine, who could be a really good off-ball threat with his shooting, with his cutting, and his athleticism, LaVine also thinks of himself as an alpha dog. So if he's going to be dominating the ball, that puts Dunn off the ball where he's not really as effective. So, like, what kind of confidence level do you have in, while these guys have shown flashes individually, what kind of confidence level do you have in them figuring it out together?
It's a tough fit because defensively it's great. You know, Dunn is a legitimately good defender. We've seen him near the NBA, top of the NBA leaderboard in steal rate since he's become a full-time player. He's a dogged on-ball defender. He does gamble a little bit too much. He does have a tendency to foul, but really, Chris Dunn is a very good defensive NBA point guard, close to elite. He's also tall, long arms. He can check the shooting guards that, you know, Zach LaVine potentially could have trouble guarding. So defensively, it's a good match. It's like you can hide LaVine on the weaker backcourt player. Dunn could take the stronger backcourt player. The problem is offensively, it's twofold. Both these guys like the ball in their hands. They both see themselves as the alpha dog. As you said, they both like to initiate the offense, to run pick and rolls. Dunn just isn't a threat off the ball because he's not a shooter. I mean, you could look at Chris Dunn's shooting numbers this year. He's only made 1 3 the whole season. He's 2 for 9 from the year on three. Yeah, but, I mean, you know, that's a small sample size. We saw last year in 52 games, Chris Dunn shot 32% from three and 2.6 attempts a game. So Dunn is basically a non-shooter. So if you're going to have a non-shooter in today's NBA, like, you basically only have one of those guys. I feel like you probably need four shooters on the floor at all times. If you want to be a really good team, minimum three shooters. So it's just tough to have Dunn out there with LaVine because defenses can sag so far off him when he's playing off the ball, load up on the lane against the drives, against Carter in the paint, against LaVine when he's trying to attack the rim. So that's a big problem. It's like, offensively, if LaVine is going to be the guy with the ball in his hands, then Chris Dunn can't really be the other guard next to him because it just presents so many problems from a spacing perspective to have a non-shooter out there next to him in the backcourt. When Dunn's initiating the offense and LaVine's off the ball, that works a little bit better. The problem there, though, is that Dunn still hasn't shown great vision. He's also very turnover prone. We saw last year, he did have a 2-to-1 assist to turnover ratio. But he turned it over 3 times a game. He's doing the same thing this year through his first 4 games back. He has, like, B. I give him a B in terms of being a facilitator. He averaged 6 assists a game last year. He sees the court decently well, but not great. Dunn also hasn't proven that he is a reliable free throw shooter yet. Now, we have to give him credit. He did ice the game against the Spurs with 3 clutch free throws towards the end. He actually hasn't missed a free throw all season. At the start of his career, 61% as a rookie, 73% last year. That pairing, you know, LaVine's here to stay. Like, I don't think they're going to move LaVine. I don't know if they can move LaVine, even if they wanted to. Perhaps, you know, because there's such a need for shooting and athleticism throughout the NBA, a team with cap space would roll the dice on him. He is signed long term. Maybe the Bulls sour on him after this whole fiasco following Celtics game where, you know, it sure seems like the tea leaves point to Zach LaVine being the one who is sort of leading the player mutiny. With that said, I got to think LaVine's going to be here long term. Yeah. Chris Dunn is the guy who's going to be up for a contract extension after this year. You know, is Chris Dunn the Bulls' point guard of the future? I think that is one of the biggest long term questions facing the franchise. You know, if the Bulls end up with the 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 pick, you could look at a guy like Murray State point guard Ja Morant, who hit a game winner today against, I believe, Evansville. He is a tremendous talent. Now, we know Cameron Payne went to Murray State. We know Isaiah Cannon went to Murray State. I honestly believe Ja Morant is on a whole other level than those guys. Watch him play, and it is shocking to me how he ended up at the mid-major level, because this dude's talent just pops off the screen. So big, so athletic, amazing vision for Ja Morant. He is very skinny. He's learning how to become a shooter, but we're getting ahead of ourselves here. The question, though, is, like, is Chris Dunn the long-term point guard for this team? Jury very much still out on that.
I'm
with the Bulls.
On that note, I know this was right after the Spurs game. Joe Cowley, sometimes he, like, reported that the Bulls, that basically just that, like, the Bulls front office is still not sure about Dunn. Probably because the fit with LaVine is, right, as we mentioned, is questionable. I know he brought up after that, like, what they've done in the past. Allegedly, they liked Colin Sexton a lot. They brought in, like, Trae Young, I think, for a workout. I think he used that as kind of some evidence that the Bulls might not be in on Dunn. And just one thing, like, we talked about how he's, like, Chris Dunn, like, the mid-range game is his bread and butter, those floaters. And just, like, I'm just not sure, like, if that really, if you can really build, like, in a, especially in this NBA, like, it's great that he's good at those shots. If you hit those shots, especially, like, late in games, that can be a weapon, as we saw against the Spurs. But, like, if you're going to craft, like, an elite offensive player out of, especially, like, a point guard these days, like, a guy who basically makes his hay from mid-range but doesn't shoot threes and doesn't get to the line, like, I think that's really tough to have as, like, one of your main lead ball handlers. I mentioned DeRozan in this Spurs game. I feel like that he kind of falls under that as well. Like, DeRozan is a great player, all-star. He scores a lot, but we've seen it break down the playoffs when just, like, his mid-range game dries up, doesn't have as much to go there. And he's a guy that gets to the line a lot. Chris Dunn doesn't get to the line a lot. If his efficiency is based on him, like, shooting 50% mid-range, that's just really not going to work. So, like, he's really going to have to figure out how to at least, if not shoot more threes, he's going to have to get to the line more. Because this even in the Spurs game, he only took two threes, missed both. Against the Thunder, he didn't take any threes and, like, didn't even really look to shoot any. So, like, if he's just, like, not going to be a three-point threat at all, he's going to have to get to the line more, get to the rim more. And just he's basically, his efficiency can't rely on him shooting flames from mid-range, because that's just not going to work. Like, you go through stretches where you're going to be really hot from there, but you can't rely on hitting 50% of those shots all the time, because it's just too difficult. As the year goes on, you're going to tire out and defenses are going to play for it. And he's just going to have to diversify his offense if he's going to be that point guard of the future.
I totally agree. But you know what, Jason? I haven't seen anything that leads me to believe he's anything more than that. Like, yeah, that really is the one part of his offensive game where he thrives. I mean, you basically gave a nice complete picture of his offense to the listeners. But, you know, right now we haven't seen him be able to find success with anything other than the mid-range game. It's a big question for Dunn. It's a big question for the Bulls moving forward. And, you know, you saw the next night against Oklahoma City, the Bulls lose 121-96. That was on Monday. Dunn in that game, 12 points in 26 minutes, 7 assists, 4 turnovers. I thought he played a decent game. Obviously, that game is going to be defined by the fight in the third quarter, which Chris Dunn was primarily involved in.
Yeah, honestly, like, before we get into the fight, like, his numbers, like, I feel like the fact that he only took 8 shots, he took 8 shots, 0 threes, 2 free throws. I think the free throws were, like, a penalty situation where it's not like he even drew them going, like, driving the basket. 8 shots in a game with Zach LaVine not playing is absolutely ridiculous. I don't even think it was really his fault. There was a lot going on with Dunn coming, like, playing off the ball, working off screens while, like, Cameron Payne was handling the ball, and they were, like, trying to pound into the post. Like, this is, like, almost a whole other conversation about Jim Boylan's offense, which has been written about a bit lately. I know Stephen Noah, The Athletic, wrote about how it's been antiquated.
No. All the
subs with, like, Rolo and all that kind of stuff. It's slow. They're slowing it down a lot. Not shooting. I haven't looked at the three-point numbers, but just, like, it's been really bad. It's been slower than they were under Hoiberg. There was a point in the game yesterday where Boylan was caught, like, screaming at Shaq Harrison to slow the pace down instead of pushing. And I feel like the way that Dunn was used yesterday was against the Thunder was really ridiculous. Like I said, 8 shots, didn't have the ball as much. Like, when you have Dunn out there with no LaVine, you got to have him just running that pick and roll, pick and pop with Lowry, with Portis, him getting downhill towards the basket. Instead, using him off the ball like they did and playing those post-ups was ridiculous. It was really ugly to watch for the most part. Against a team like the Thunder, their defense is elite, understandable, but still, like, what they were trying to do was just really tough to watch. And then all the turnovers, I think the Bulls had, like, 25 turnovers, and it was just really tough. And, like, I really do hope that Boylan kind of opens up the offense at least some, hopefully pushing the ball a bit. I understand, like, with, when you're dealing with somewhat of a lack of talent, slowing it down, I guess. But, like, the Bulls have some young players. When you have a guard like Chris Dunn, get out in transition, take advantage of transition baskets if Lowry can get out and get open threes in transition. I would rather see that than the fucking post-ups with Robin Lopez were killing me yesterday. He had, like, 5 turnovers. There were possessions where he was, like, just dribbling the ball for, like, 5-10 seconds in the post. Like, I don't want to watch that garbage. Like, if the Bulls are going to be bad, at least make the offense at least somewhat entertaining to watch, because the roll-on Portis post-ups, so just over and over again with the second unit, was brutal.
Yeah, you know, the Bulls, the big thing to come from that game, though, they showed their road dog mentality.
Yeah, they showed their fight.
I feel like the only thing Jim Boylan has talked about since he's become the Bulls coach is toughness, is fighting. We got to show some fight. We got to do some diamond push-ups so you guys can run your offensive sets better. Well, finally, Jim Boylan, they did get into a fight, and this was so funny because there's Boylan right in the middle of it.
Not only did the Bulls impression,
like, this is Knicks heat in the 90s. Basically putting Jeremy Grant into a full Nelson and just dragging him away from half court. Jim Boylan getting in the thick of it.
Yeah, that was wild. Because I guess if we want to paint the picture for those who didn't see it, I'm sure most people saw it by now, but, like, started harmlessly enough. Like, Chris Dunn was guarding Russ coming around, like, a screen or something like that. I think a foul was called. I don't even think the foul was called on Dunn. I think it was called on somebody else. Dunn was a little up in Russ's grill, so Russ gave him a little shove. Dunn, showing that road dog mentality, gave Russ a shove back, and then from there just kind of went into total chaos. Like, Rolo and Jeremy Grant went at it. It kind of almost spilled into the stands. And that's when Coachy McCoacherson, road dog, Wolfpack man, Jim Boylan, comes running from across. This was basically going on the Thunder bench where the fight was going on. Boylan comes from the Bulls bench, and like you mentioned, like, chokehold Jeremy Grant and, like, pulls him backwards. I feel like that's kind of wild. I feel like it's been kind of downplayed. Like, maybe that's not that big a deal. Maybe we're making too big of a deal of it. But, like, I feel like an opposing coach coming up to the other bench and pulling not one of his players, but one of the other team's players away the way he did, I feel like that's, like, ridiculous and not acceptable, or at least it shouldn't be. Like, it doesn't seem like anything's going to happen to him. And I feel like not many people have talked about it that much. But, like, I feel like that's just kind of wild and nuts. I don't know. Maybe I'm crazy.
Yeah, and Boylan said after the game, he's like, this happens all the time. This is no big deal. I don't know. Does it? I mean, sure, there's going to be scuffles in the NBA, but the fact that their coach was bear-hugging an opposing Thunder player, I thought that was just completely ridiculous. But, you know, some people are going to like that the Bulls finally showed a little bit of fight. The Bulls have been getting their faces pounded in all season long. So,
I saw this stat yesterday. I think they lost by 25 yesterday, right? And I think this is like the 6th time they've lost by that many points this season, which is the first in the NBA. I believe the Bulls are dead last in point differential at this point, obviously losing by 56. We'll skew those things a little bit, but it's not like that was like these aren't the only few times they've been their ass beat. They got their ass beat by the Warriors, the Raptors beat them by 30, the Celtics beat them by like 25, 30, like Hornets beat them by 30, by 30. So like they've gotten their ass beat their fair share of times this season.
Yeah, and you know the Bulls, while they did show some fight, they still lost by what, like 25 points.
Back to the fight for a second, though, which I totally forgot about this with Boylan and whatever, dragging Jeremy Grant out there. In the comments of Bloggable, someone, I can't remember who it was, but reminded me that Boylan got into it with Matt Barnes and Boogie a couple years ago in, like, a similar, like, scrum situation.
I think was this with, during, like, the Joakim Noah fuck you?
No. This was with Taj and Rondo, 2017, I believe it was, because I saw there was a link to an SB Nation post they did on it, and I think Taj got, like, teed up for, I can't remember what he did, but he got teed up, and, like, Rondo was kind of involved too, and the benches kind of cleared, and then there's Boylan coming in, like, kind of shoving away Matt Barnes and Boogie shoved him back, because he was like, dude, you're not my coach, get your fucking hands off me, like, what do you think you're doing, and then he got into with Matt Barnes after that, and, like, I would never mess with Matt Barnes. That crazy dude. It's like Boylan is like, he's just a wild madman. Like, this guy's insane. It's crazy.
A wild madman. Boylan, for those who don't know, he played some football before he eventually played college basketball at Maine. His dad was the captain and all Big Ten guy at Michigan State, played linebacker, also played guard. His dad was also a heavyweight boxer. So I feel like that's where Boylan's sort of ethos comes from, his dad having this real tough guy mentality that's obviously trickled down to Boylan. And, you know, he's a basketball coach who coaches like a football coach.
Yeah, I saw that. I think Casey tweeted this. So, like, the other day, I can't remember what game it was before. Maybe it was the Magic. I can't remember. But, like, they, like, put nickname, like, almost like football-y nicknames, like, above the players' lockers. And it was just, like, another in the long list of just, like, almost like cringeworthy things. Like, I don't, we probably like make too much of some of this stuff and like make fun of some of these quotes, but just like, he's just like the biggest coachy coach, most obnoxious with these things ever. Just like, it's just almost just like kind of fun to make fun of, especially because the Bulls are so bad. Like, there's really nothing wrong with being like, obviously, like a hard nosed coach to a degree. Like, I feel like he just blows past like the degree where it's like acceptable and just like, everything he says is almost just like a caricature of like a coachy coach, McCoacherson guy, and it's like all this stuff. Like the whole package is just crazy. It's wild, and it's honestly just kind of funny. Like, I'm just gonna make jokes about it. Maybe it'll actually work, and he'll actually bring the team together, and they start playing better. But for right now, when they're getting their ass beat every other night, like, I'm just gonna make fun of it because it's like obnoxious and ridiculous.
It's a fucking joke, and they have to fire this loser. I know that would mean the Bulls have to pay three coaches next year. I know that would mean that, you know, this coach in Boylan, who Paxson sees in it as an extension of himself, that's like the Bulls admitting failure. But tactically, Jim Boylan is not a modern NBA coach. I mean, the guy is living in the 80s. He's living in the 90s in terms of how he's coaching the Bulls. Slow-ass pace. The Bulls are taking so many more shots in the last 5 seconds of the shot clock, as Stephen Noe wrote in his great article at The Athletic earlier this week. And then you look at what, you know, the former people who have covered Boylan and his previous coaching stops have been saying, I've been loving the coverage out of Utah. Boylan coached the Utah Utes from 2007 through 2011. Utah, in that time, one NCAA tournament appearance. You know, Boylan's tenure, though, was mostly distinct by the fact that everyone fucking hated him. There was a column in the Salt Lake Tribune earlier this week, headline, Jim Boylan is burning down the Chicago Bulls, not unlike the way he torched the Utes. There are so many good lines in this. I'm just going to read over a small portion of it.
Quick note first. This guy, I believe the author is Gordon Monson, right? Something like that.
Yeah.
You wrote a column that someone had brought to my attention. I think Dan Bernstein actually linked to it in a column like last week about Boylan. That he wrote a column like at the end of Boylan's tenure in like 2011, going back to it. And like, that was just kind of really prescient as to how, like, what's going on right now. Just like, there was like a note about how like Boylan got pissed at like a guy dunking at the end of a game and he like was like swearing at him and it was like just going off, like calling him classes or something like that. It was just all kind of like perfectly setting up to like what he's doing now. So yeah. And like I said, this same guy wrote this column 7 years ago or whatever, when Boylan was coaching out, wrote this column this week. So take it away with some of these lines.
Sure. I was just going to read over the small part. Over breakfast that morning in a small Salt Lake City cafe, Boylan blamed his players for a lack of discipline and absence of competitive diligence and drive. But the more he pointed the finger at others, the more the blame bounced back to him. Quote, we need toughness, Boylan said. We need players. What Utah really needed was a better coach. A year later, he was fired. He lost a third of his roster when he was Utah's coach. The entire team just transferred out. Nobody stayed there more than 2 years, essentially. No one wants to play for Jim Boylan, which is the reason the Bulls have to fire him. It's just not going to be a good, healthy work environment as long as Boylan's the coach. Boylan has to go. He cannot be the coach next year. This is already settled in my mind. There's nothing he can do. Oh, and if you're wondering, like, you know, what's Utah really going to do? Well, as Boylan left, Utah got really good. Larry Krystowiak became the coach. They won 20 games or more the last 5 seasons. They've produced NBA players like DeLon Wright, Jakob Poeltl, just to name a few, who are both first-round draft picks. So, Boylan, as long as he's the coach, the Bulls just are not going to have a healthy work environment. I think that that's already like that. That's over. Like the dude lost the team within 4 fucking days. Get Boylan's ass out of here, man. He can coach out the rest of this year because the Bulls are trying to lose games anyway. I mean, they don't think they are, but they are because they're just so bad at winning them. He can't be the coach next year, Jason. No free agent's going to want to play here. No one is going to feel good about returning to this team. Like, what do you think Zach LaVine's internal monologue is? Knowing he has to go to work and play for Jim Boylan every day. Even if he thought Fred Hoiberg was the biggest coward in the world, the biggest pushover in the world, I guarantee that that was a healthier work environment than with Jim Boylan leading the charge. And we know that Boylan was already around the team for the last 3 years. Boylan was the guy who, in a lot of ways, was running the practices, running the meetings. Just get his ass out of here, though. If he's the leader of your quote-unquote program, as he likes to say, it's just not going to be a place that anyone wants to play for.
I'm just assuming that he's going to be there next year for multiple reasons. That the money situation, like he's under contract for cheap next year, and I don't think Fred's going to get. Is it that the Fred thing is, if that's just, is that just an NBA head coaching job, or like if he takes any job, like I wasn't totally sure about that. Like if he gets like if he goes back to college, like the Bulls still have to pay him that full. I would guess yes, right?
I'm not totally sure, but I believe that's correct.
So like, yeah. I feel like between that and the fact that Paxson, the Bulls front office like is endorsing this like behavior and they're like all about it. Which actually we can actually talk about this in a bit, some of the comments that they've made, but we'll talk about that later. And then just like, I still feel like the Bulls are going to play a little better at some point. Like maybe there's going to be a complete disaster. Maybe Boylan's going to poison them so much that they're a literal like 20 win team. I still feel like that when they get healthy, they're going to be decent enough where they're going to show enough and like win just enough where it's going to like, where they're going to feel comfortable enough to bring Boylan back next year. Like, hey, look, they showed fight. They won some games. They like got to like 25, 30, maybe they're on like 30 wins, and that's going to be enough to keep Boylan's job. I'm just like assuming that right now. Not that I want it to happen. Like, trust me, they should absolutely be looking at other options. They should be looking at other options right now. But I'm just assuming right now that because from what all we heard, that Paxson and Foreman, they love this shit, this try hard shit. It's got actually. Even in that vein, the fact that Boylan went over there and choked out Jeremy Grant just kind of made me remind me. I'm sure John Paxson loved that shit after choking Vinny Del Negro. That's right up John Paxson's alley.
That's Bulls culture 101 right there, man. Exactly.
I just have a sinking feeling they're gonna play just well enough. Which like I want to see them play better, but I also don't want to see them play better. Like it's such a just like a 50-50 like thing. I go back and forth. Like I want to see these young guys play better, but like if that means Boylan's back next year, I really don't want to see that. So it's like, damn, I don't know. But
I gotta say, man, the Bulls are, they've really been a tough ass team under Jim Boylan. They're really showing some fight, really showing some character. This year is some bullshit, Tom Paxson would say. By the way, the Bulls threw 7 games under Jim Boylan, as Stefan Noah tweeted today, they are tied for the worst net rating ever in NBA history with the 2011-12 Bobcats. That team won 7 games. They had the worst winning percentage in NBA history. That was the lockout year, I believe. Yeah. -15.1 is the Bulls' net rating. That is points per 100 possessions, offensive, defensive efficiency. So,
again,
trash.
Obviously, the 56-point loss will do that. But I think just the bigger part, the bigger factor, they have played a little better defensively. How much of that goes to them versus, like, I guess they have been playing a little harder defensively. I'll give them that much. Like, that number wouldn't be quite as good if the Spurs didn't completely shit their pants in the second half. The Spurs were on their way to a big offensive number, and then they just fell apart. But the offensive rating, I think, is a bigger problem. As we've talked about, like, the offensive rating under Boylan in 7 games is something like 94 or 95, which is, like, historically bad stuff. And, like, with the slower pace and just the way they're playing is absolutely garbage. And, like, maybe that's not all in the coaching. Like, Lowry has struggled a bit with his shooting. Like, he's still trying to find his rhythm. He's been really inconsistent. And some of it's just him missing open shots. Other times, like, him against the Thunder, he tried to do a few things off the dribble that were absolutely horrendous. So like some of these guys are still trying to find a rhythm, and but like overall it's like the offense under Boylan has been pathetic, and I feel like that some of that is definitely on him, just the way they're trying to run the offense really slow, slowing down their half court offense is just really tough to watch. So like it's bad. It's real, real bad. And I like I said, it's going to get better. They have enough talent where it's going to look better, but like how much better it is, I don't know.
It's not going to get that much better. I mean, they're almost certainly going to finish with one of the four worst records in the league.
So I'm going. I think they're pretty locked into five. Like if you look at the
five
tank things right now, there are like five teams that are clearly way worse than everybody else.
The Suns.
The Suns have won three in a row. Actually, tonight was a great tank night for the Bulls. The Hawks won.
Hawks win.
The Cavs beat the Pacers on the road with a buzzer beater. It's huge for them. The Suns have won three in a row. Right now, the Bulls are tied for the worst record in the league with the Suns, winners of three straight. But again, yeah, it's Bulls, Suns, Hawks, Cavs, and Knicks. The Knicks are really fucking bad. The Suns just blew out the Knicks, I believe, at Madison Square Garden. I feel like Porzingis is not coming back this year. Even if he does, he won't be that good coming off an ACL. So those five teams are basically like four or five losses clear of like the next team. So like right now, barring any other team completely falling apart, which somebody could, long season, teams go into ruts. But right now there are five teams really, really locked into, it seems, this tank race. So right now the Bulls are in pretty good shape. As long as they don't start like go on a seven-game winning streak like they did last year, I feel like they're going to play a little better. But this week the Bulls play like the Nets tomorrow night, who are going to be on a second of a back-to-back after beating the Lakers at home. I think that's a game the Bulls should win. The Nets have won six in a row, but like that's a tough second game of a back-to-back after a lot of emotion beating the Lakers. And then I think they play the Magic at home, another game theoretically the Bulls could win. They play at Cleveland this weekend, and then I think they have, like, maybe the Timberwolves after that. So, like, the Bulls have a week coming up where they could win a few games. They might be able to go on a little winning streak, but then I think they go on the road. In January, they have, like, their West Coast road trip where they're just going to get their ass beat. So, like, even if they win a few games coming up now, they're going to lose their fair share of the rest of the year, hopefully, and they're going to be in a pretty good position when it comes down to it with the draft. But let's not talk about the draft. We've talked about the draft too much. Let's transition to Jabari Parker. We mentioned him a little earlier. And before the Magic game, it came out that he was going to be done. He was out of the rotation, which, like, Jabari's obviously been kind of a mess this season. He did start playing a little better over the last maybe month or so. I feel like he played his way into shape. He was out of shape. Came into camp out of shape. Got benched and then had spent like the first month or so of the year playing into shape. Started playing a little better. Then Lowry and Portis come back and his minutes just kind of aren't there because he's not a small forward. He's a power forward and his minutes kind of dried up. Comes out that he is not going to be in the rotation anymore. He played 4 minutes against the Magic, was a -9. And then it comes out that he's on the trade block. The Bulls are trying to trade for him. They're working with Mark Bartleson to find a trade for him. What do you think the Bulls could get in Jabari trade? Like, do you think that's going to happen imminent, whatever? Like, I what do you even make of this whole Jabari Parker situation, I guess, is what I'm asking.
The main objective for the Bulls here is not to take back money unless they're actually adding a player who can be a long-term piece for the core. Like, for example, if the Wizards want to get rid of Otto Porter.
Yeah.
Otto Porter makes $25 million a year. You can debate back and forth whether or not Otto Porter is worth that money. I will say, though, the Bulls need
to make... I would say he's not, but, like, I feel like he, in the right situation, maybe, like, he would fit right in as a small forward, that he could maybe be close if he can be, like, a 40% three-point shooter and play good defense. He's not going to be
worth... Otto Porter hit 43% in 2017, 44% in 2018. Both those years, he's averaging 13, 14 points a game. This year, his numbers are down a little bit across the board. Still only 25 years old. Otto Porter is also one of those guys who just grades out, like, awesomely in the RPM stats, in a lot of the advanced metrics. He's not someone who's going to create a lot of offense for himself off the dribble. He's mostly someone who's going to be kind of a 3-and-D guy. And then, you know, the real question is, how elite is that defense? I don't think it's elite. That's like not the right word to use for it, but he's solid defensively. Yeah. He can stretch the floor. He can hit some shots. He hits the glass pretty well. He's going to get in the passing lanes and get steals. So, I mean, do you want to lock up Otto Porter, $25 million a year over the next 4 years? It is the biggest position in need. He would fill a lot of problems.
I think there's only 2 years left on his deal after this year.
Yeah, I mean, would you trade Jabari for Porter? Let's talk about it.
Well, like, first of all, like, this cap space this year, really, I feel like at this point, does not matter. The Bulls are not signing a really good player this summer. There's no reason for any good free agent to come here. Like, they might be able to use the free or cap space to sign, like, depth, but, like, they're obviously not getting a top-tier superstar. They're probably not getting a second-tier, like, star. Like, if you're looking at, like, Chris Middleton, Kemba Walker, like, you could even argue whether even the Bulls should even try to sign one of those guys. So, like, basically, I feel like punting on cap space this year is the way to go. So then I guess, do you also kind of punt on cap space for whatever, whether it be 2020, by taking on Otto Porter's $25 million? I guess, theoretically, maybe you could deal him, flip him later if things aren't working out. I guess I would lean towards, I would probably take him, just because, like, he is a pretty solid player. Maybe in a new situation outside of the, I guess the Wizards are and the Bulls are both jokes, so I don't know. But, like, he would fit – the Bulls have a gaping hole at small forward. He would fit in really nicely at small forward. And I feel like for next year, that would be really good. You would worry about what that would mean for 2020. But are you that confident in the Bulls signing a free agent? Like, do you think that's the way the Bulls are going to get a superstar? I feel like maybe – if you think about Anthony Davis – be a free agent in 2020 if you want to go after him. I feel like I'd probably just say fuck it and I'd say yes.
Yeah, the Bulls need some talent. They definitely need a wing. They definitely need some shooting. I'm trying to think about how all these guys would play next to Zion. So yeah. If you run a lineup with LaVine, Porter, Zion, Markkanen, Carter. You would have a lot of length. You'd have a lot of shooting. You would have some plus defenders. You'd have to have Zion and LaVine.
You would theoretically have playmakers. Yeah, you would theoretically have playmakers. You would have a lot of shooting. Obviously, if you're into the whole, like, you need, like, a pure point guard, or not even pure point guard, but I guess, like, an actual point guard, because none of those guys are actually point guards. But, like, I feel like LaVine could do it if – Levine's just got to cut down the turnovers. I mean, as unique as Zion is, like, I feel like if you're, like, making him Ben Simmons, that probably doesn't work. Like, he's not exactly, like, that, like, talented to be, like, that kind of point forward. Correct me if I'm wrong there, but I feel like
he's not. I let him do it. Why not? I mean, you're going to put the ball in his hands anyway. He's going to be the offensive initiator.
All right. I mean,
then I would just put the ball in his hands.
All right, yeah, because, like, LaVine, I feel like LaVine, if he could just cut down on the turnovers, he could be that guy. Just, he's so sloppy with the ball, like, that it just might not be tenable. But, like, I mean, at this point, fuck it, I'll try it, man. Like, the Bulls right now are terrible. Like, and while they have some, like, nice pieces and stuff, like, right now it's, like, not that great. I'm willing to try anything. Like, go out on a limb and try something unique. If it doesn't work, like, it doesn't work. Like, what the Bulls have been doing for years hasn't worked. I'll try something that... Try something a little different with talented players. And if it doesn't work, it doesn't work, I guess. And they'll have to try something else.
They can't make this trade, though, if it takes them out of the Zion race. I do think that's up for debate. Yeah. Like, would Porter improve the team that much this season where they would not be one of the five worst teams in the league, one of the four worst teams in the league? I don't know. Like, I don't think that Porter's impact would be that dramatic on this current roster because he's so much more of, like, a super role player than he is a guy who's going to, like, create offense out of thin air. Matt from Bloggable tweets this all the time, talks about it all the time. The Bulls have not made a trade to improve the team since the John Sammons trade during D. Rose's rookie
John
year.
John Fish, and my guy. I love John Sammons.
When they ended up losing to the Celtics in that epic first-round series. I mean, dude, that was a fucking lifetime ago for me. And you think where we were in our lives back in what year was that? Oh,
that was 09?
09, yeah. That was a lifetime ago, man.
Yeah, I remember being in college. I was like, I feel like when D. Rose had that game one in that series, whatever, he had like 36 points. like set some kind of record, or like tied a record with like Kareem or Wilt or some shit for like rookie playoffs. I can't remember who it was, but like I think I was with like my parents, like doing something down at U of I for down to college. Like that's like a damn decade ago. Like that shit is wild. So like the Bulls, yeah, making a trade that actually improved the team instead of just basically selling off parts. Like I guess like you don't really want to improve the team that much, like you said, this season when you want them to lose as much as possible. But like maybe in this situation, it wouldn't be the worst idea because like you said, I don't know on a team that's already bad already. Like is Otto Porter going to be a guy that changes everything and like adds like 5 wins? Like I feel like that's probably a stretch, but I don't know. Like I feel like at this point, I don't know. Like I'm willing to try go out and try different things. This was because what the Bulls. What's happening right now with the team is just like so shitty and ugly. They're like, go out and try something. Take a risk, take a chance, make a change. I don't know.
Yeah, I tend to agree with you. I think Porter would be good. Obviously, that's just so much money, but like Levine's making $20 million, right? Like
the Bulls' books are pretty damn clean. Like
can you get rid of Felicio in that trade? Stephen Parker and Felicio. The whole point with the Parker trade discussion is like the Bulls cannot take salary back that extends beyond this year unless they're adding a player to the core. So you can't trade him to me for like Evan Turner. Like Greenberg wrote this column with The Athletic popping off some trade ideas. I just disagree with some of that trade ideas he threw out in that column. It was a good column by John. Friend of the podcast, I'm going to say, even though he's probably never listened to the podcast. But John's a great guy. Great, just voice throughout the Chicago sports community. But I don't like a trade for Evan Turner if he's got 2 years left on his deal.
Like, I'm totally in on, like, if I'm fine taking on money for next season. Like, if you get a first-round pick to take on one guy, like I've mentioned, is, like, the Rockets. Like, I don't know if the Rockets actually want Jabari, but, like, trade Jabari for Brandon Knight and like a first round pick. Like I would do that. Would you do that?
Yeah, maybe I guess so.
Maybe take on like Chris as well if they want to.
Yeah, I mean, if you could get a first rounder for it, I wasn't sure if those ideas were including a first rounder. If you get a first rounder and you can take on salary for next year, I mean, the Bulls basically did that to get Chandler Hutchison this year. Yeah. I mean,
like I said, because I feel like cap space this summer, like at this point, just give up on it. Like, you're not going to need the max slot for a max player. Like, it'd be nice to have some cap space for maybe some depth help for next year. But like, in terms of like saving whatever, 35, 40 million for like a max player, like I feel like that pipe dream is over. I know some people want to hang on to it. If you can get a meeting with a great player, there's no, why would any great player, if the Bulls, assuming they win like 25 games this year, no great player wants to come play with a bunch of young guys who haven't proven shit. So like use the cap space instead as an asset, use it to get a first-round pick if you can, do whatever, which is what we thought the Bulls should have done this past summer instead of signing Jabari Parker. And so they signed Jabari Parker. So I guess if they can use Jabari to get a first-round pick anyway, so I guess it would kind of even out. Like, I would totally take that. Because, again, living in the pipe dream of a star player coming to a so far shitty group of shitty core that hasn't proven anything is a pipe dream. So, like, get some type of asset. I guess, would you do that kind of trade if it was, like, multiple second-rounders instead of a first?
It depends how much salary is coming back, who you're adding. But, yeah, I was wrong. Apologies to John and anyone else. If the Bulls are getting a first-round pick back, you do that trade for sure. I guess I didn't totally think that one through. But, yes, I mean, that's what we want the Bulls to do, to leverage their salary cap space into draft picks during a year when they're just not going to be appealing enough to land even a mid-tier free agent, most likely. The Bulls are going to be bargain shopping on the free agent market. I mean, maybe someone like Jeremy Lamb, that's a guy who's caught my eye a couple times in Charlotte. I've been a big Jeremy Lamb guy since he was in the draft. He's done nothing but disappoint me, but he's had a pretty decent year this year for Charlotte. I think he's still only like 26 or 27. So, you know, that's the tier of free agent the Bulls will be looking at next season, I think.
Yeah, most likely. Like, Jeremy Lamb's good. Like, I feel like even if they took on, whatever, $15 million in salary, like, the Bulls are in position to have a decent amount of cap space. I guess we'll see what happens with, like, Bobby Portis and his new contract. I would kind of guess that they try to keep him around. we'll see. I don't know, but yeah, if they went out and like spent, what do you think a guy like Jeremy Lamb would make? Like 12 million, maybe.
Man, that even seems like
10 to 12. I don't know. It'll be interesting to see this summer because a lot of teams are gonna have money. It's like, I don't know if we're gonna have another 2016 where guys just make a lot, but like the cap is gonna be spiking the next couple of years. I'm pretty sure it's going. It'll be up to like 109 million, I think, this summer, and then I think it's going up again the next summer or two. So like, with a lot of teams willing to spend, like I think there was like a freeze the last like summer or two, but I think we're gonna see more. We might see some bigger deals for questionable guys, I guess, this summer. Maybe I'm not unless teams are play it safe again, but. So many teams having cap space, and like, I feel like we're going to see some guys getting paid. But yeah, if anything, whatever, 10 to 12 million for Jeremy Lamb, I feel like it's something the Bulls, I'd be fine like considering that as a guy that can either whatever start it small forward or I guess do it smart or something like that, or just off the bench, something like that. That sounds great to me. Like, whatever, they need shooting, they need help on the wing. The Bulls are ridiculously thin on the wing. Clearly, they need some help there.
Just fire Boylan. Fire Boylan, that okay, has happened. I mean, Taxon.
Fire Boylan. Let's. Did you see the comments made by Gar Foreman came out of his hole, made some comments to the Los Angeles Times, which I found kind of interesting. Did you see these comments or no?
I did see them. I don't have them in front of me. So
yeah, neither do I. But basically. The gist of it was like, oh, we're like we're exactly where we should be. We're totally fine. We're where we want to be. We're where we should be, which is absolutely obviously a lie. Completely ridiculous thing to say. Like, you are not where you want to be. Like, you're a complete laughingstock right now. And you did not – again, we've mentioned this multiple times. The Bulls, I'm pretty sure, did not intend to tank this season. They're in a position where they're going to. They were not – they were planning on taking a big step forward. They signed Jabari Parker to be their starting small forward to build this young core that could take a big step forward. It's obviously not happening. They did not expect to be 7-24 with a near mutiny and firing their coach. Obviously, that's a complete joke. And I feel like that was kind of along the line of the John Paxson comments where he said, we actually had a really good week after our whatever mutiny and 56-point loss. Just like
great week, Balls.
Yeah, just like, you know, like obviously as like whatever, the front office, you're not going to completely just shit on your team, blah, blah, blah. But like, I feel like this at least be a little more honest with the fans who can – absolutely see right through you. Like when you say stuff like this was actually a really good week, or like, yeah, this is where we actually want to be, like we're totally fine, this is where we thought we'd be, like obviously that's just not true. Like, you do not expect to be 7-24. You do not expect to fire Fred Hoiberg a quarter of the way through the season. You do not expect to be the worst offense in the league. Like, it's not where you expect to be. Just like, it would be refreshing just to be like, yeah, you know, like the season is not gone as we'd hoped. Like, we were expecting to be a little better. Like, we were hoping things would have gone a little better with Fred. Like, and with Paxson, like, you know, like, we had a tough week. Like, we think we can get through this together. But it's like, there's just so much bullshit coming from the coach, the front office. Where it's just like, you see why so many fans are just, like, disillusioned with this whole product and just the whole organization. And why we complain about them all the time. As we mentioned after... I don't know if it was last podcast or the Hoiberg podcast where we said we don't want to shit on the Bulls all the time. We end up shitting on the Bulls all the time because the Bulls make us shit on them all the time. And it's like stuff like that where they sell you this line of bullshit, which is obviously crap. And we're going to call that out. Like, we're going to call a spade a spade. And we're not going to take that kind of garbage just like lying down. It's ridiculous.
John Paxson at the end of the last season. We never want to be in this position again. Guess what, John Paxson?
You're in this position again. I mean, at this point, they're on pace to be worse than they were last year. I've mentioned before, I still think that they're going to find a way to win around the same number of games, maybe even more. But like right now, they're literally tied for the worst record and have the worst point differential. Like, they're literally in this, if not in the same spot as they were last year, if not worse. So like, It's happening again. So, like, yeah.
And it goes back to something I wrote in my season preview type column. I like to think of it as, like, the state of the Bulls. My state of the union address for the Bulls at the beginning of every season. In that article, I wrote, the Bulls front office has done the only thing we can reliably count on them to do. They've built a bad team on accident. And that's what they did. They did not intend for this team to, you know, finish with the worst record in the NBA. Yet here they are. Hopefully it pays off for us. I mean, the tank gods need to smile on us once every 10 years. The Bulls need to be saved from themselves. This is too big of a franchise to be a complete fucking joke, as it has been for way too long. And the only way it's going to happen is with a massive talent infusion. That's only going to come through getting the number one pick in the draft. It's our plea. It's our plea every week, Jason. Give us the first pick, please.
It is. Just give it to us. Don't give – again, we again, please.
Don't give it to the Knicks.
Don't give it to the Knicks. Don't give it to the Cavs. I'll accept the Hawks, but preferably the Bulls. I won't accept the Suns either. The Suns are maybe the one – Suns might be the one franchise that are a bigger joke than the Bulls because their owner is a piece of crap, threatening to move the team, all that garbage. So screw the Suns, screw the Cavs, screw the Knicks. I'll accept the Hawks being the top pick because Hawks seem like they have at least a fun foundation and a fun coach in place, and Trae Young's kind of fun. So I'll accept Zion and Trae Young as a duo, but obviously would prefer the Bulls get that top pick. You said we make this plea every week. At this point, we basically have to, because when we go through when every week, like when was the last time we like had a podcast where weren't talking about like a 30-point loss? Like it happens literally, it's seemingly every week. I feel like this after this one, when the next pod we do, we actually might not have a 30-point loss because they're actually playing some shitty teams. So maybe we won't be make the plea, but maybe the Bulls have gotten loose to all these shitty teams and they'll be like 8-27 the next time we talk, and we'll just end up doing it again. Because
hey, Jason, they only lost by 25 against the Thunder. That's that road dog mentality.
True.
For you.
True.
I think that does it for this podcast.
Yeah, there's not that much else to say. I'm trying to think. Like, I don't think much else happened in Bulls world. Besides, we got the fight. We got the Jabari situation going belly up. Levine's hurt. Dunn and Lowry are back. I want to see the young guys. Hopefully. Find some type of rhythm at some point while they also lose games, so then they could get that number one pick like we talked about. But yeah, I think that about wraps it up for this past week. And like I said, well, I guess like I just mentioned that they have some easier games. I mentioned it earlier, but we'll quick run through the schedule for this next week as leading up to the Christmas holiday. We got Wednesday night. It's home against the Nets. Like I said, they're going to be on the second of a back-to-back after they beat the Lakers. Then Fridays versus the Magic at home. Two very winnable games at Cleveland on Sunday. Winnable game. Then they got a couple days off for the holiday. And then home at Minnesota could be a fun game the day after Christmas with D. Rose coming back. And then at Washington next Friday, which the Wizards are a joke too. But, yeah, the Bulls have some winnable games coming up. Maybe we'll have some wins to talk about. Not that I'm really that excited about that. But besides that, I guess we'll see when we talk next. Christmas is coming up. If we don't talk before that, maybe we'll try to get one in before Christmas. But if not, Merry Christmas, Ricky.
Merry Christmas from the Cash Consideration.
Merry Bullsmas.
Fire John Paxson. Fuck you, John Paxson.
That's what we want for Christmas. You know how John Paxson always fires people on Christmas Eve? He should fire himself on Christmas Eve.
There you go. And with that, we've talked about the Bulls for 57 minutes. You guys deserve a damn ribbon, a medal, at least a cookie, if you've listened to this podcast for this long, given how trash the organization is. This is the Cash Considerations Podcast. I'm Ricky. That's Jason. Merry Christmas. See ya.
Peace.